Hello, everyone.
Blog Talk Radio.
Why are police photographing our license plates?
What are we doing for veterans returning home damaged physically and mentally, suffering from depression, homelessness, and suicide?
Why did the Supreme Court deposit corporate money into our electoral process?
Should we redefine middle class as working poor? Or is it just another Wall Street merger?
What's really behind new voter picture ID laws in certain states?
Why aren't NBC, ABC, CBS, and Fox asking these questions?
This is the Reasonable Voice, Blog Talk Radio. We're coming to you to connect politics and finance, humanity and world peace, and, of course, the arts in a way that encourages everyone to think for themselves so the best possible political and life choices are made by all. With artistic overtones, The Reasonable Voice is an advocate for a peaceful and prosperous world filled with creativity and political unity. Hello, this is Marcello Rolando. Please welcome our Reasonable Voices today, Liz Warren of Move On fame from California. Liz, how are you?
I'm doing great, Marcello. Thanks for having me.
Oh, my pleasure. And also today we'll be talking to Andrea Miller, who wears a host of hats, including a congressional advocate and IT IT director for PDA. How are you, Andrea, today?
I am just fine. How are you, Marcello? And again, thanks for having me on the show.
I appreciate both of you being on the show. We're going to jump right into our topic today. Between the media and government, we're full of distractions and projections. And today, Liz and Andrea and I are going to talk about something that perhaps is coming a little under the wire that we all need to become aware of and respond to and talk to Congress about and get them focused. And that is TPP, which stands for Trans-Pacific Partnership. It went out of my head there for a moment, and that's the problem. We need to get it in our head and do something about it. Trans-Pacific Partnership and its fast-tracking. Can we start with you, Liz? Tell us what Trans-Pacific Partnership is and why we need to know about it.
Sure, I'll be glad to. Marcello, the Trans-Pacific Partnership is a trade agreement that's been in negotiations for almost 5 years now. It actually started under the previous administration and continued through President Obama. And it involves the United States and 11 other countries. It is basically something that it's supposed to be a trade agreement, but of the 29 chapters, only about 5 of them actually deal with trade. The rest of the agreement is essentially a corporate gift. It's provisions that have been written by the 600 corporate advisors who've been working with the president and some of the other leaders on this, and it does nothing but undermine laws all over the world. And it's kind of a complicated issue, but just to give you the shortened version, the Trans-Pacific Partnership, if it becomes a trade agreement agreed to by the United States and all these other countries, would overrule every law in every country, because by their virtue, by the very nature, trade agreements do supersede our own laws. Countries have to agree to that. So if we have, for example, an environmental law or some other law that is contradictory to the terms of the trade agreement, the trade agreement would trump. Most of the corporations have been trying to, put things like this into the trade agreement as sort of a backdoor way of getting around laws that they don't like that inhibit their profits.
I see. So basically, I guess one basic fact we need to understand is, first of all, these days and for some time now, I guess, corporations are not so much American citizens as they are international citizens, and they follow their profit center as opposed to the American flag. So Made in America takes on a whole – I'm sorry, go ahead.
Yes, that is precisely right, Marcello. And, in fact, most of these corporations are, in fact, multinationals, which brings up part of the discussions about this particular trade agreement. There are provisions in it called investor states. And what those would do would be to give corporations, offshore corporations, for example, rights within any given country that domestic corporations don't have. And if for example, you know, we passed a law that interfered with their profits, they could actually sue us in a court outside the jurisdiction of the United States and overseen by a corporate lawyer tribunal. So it you know, to back up, it's a very, very, very complicated thing, but just to make it very simple for everybody, because I know this is sort of a big chunk to bite off. The Trans-Pacific Partnership is something that essentially trades our right to sovereignty or any country that participates in this agreement. I mean, it's not just the United States, because many of the partner countries are having problems with some of the language because it would undermine some policies that they have right now. And what we're trying to do is stop it in its tracks, if you will, by preventing Congress from granting the president something known as fast-track authority. And this is a policy that was adopted during the Nixon administration, and it's only been used for trade agreements that are controversial, things that whatever administration wants to slide in under the radar, because it specifically prohibits amendments or lengthy debate on any trade agreement. It gives the president the right to go in, negotiate the details, and then bring back a signed agreement for Congress to either, you know, rubber stamp it or vote no. It gives Congress about 20 hours in each chamber to debate it and then decide yes or no. But when they grant fast-track authority, it's essentially a vote of confidence, saying to the president and the trade representative, we believe that you know best. So what we're trying to do is convince Congress not to do that, to take on, you know, to take back, if you will, you know, their constitutional authority to oversee trade and to actually have input into the specific parts of this trade agreement that are going to affect the American people so profoundly. You know, for example, you know, things that would affect, you know, workers, consumers, the environment, the cost of medicine, internet freedom, you know, GMO labeling, all these kinds of things that you hear people talk about all the time. These are the kinds of things that, you know, corporations are trying to sort of backdoor into this trade agreement so they won't have to fight the battle on our own soil.
Okay, let me jump in a second there, Liz. Andrea, you were a congressional candidate. I know you've been in the halls of Congress many times as an activist and advocate for various issues. How did, first of all, is Congress just sort of giving up its constitutional right for checks and balances? And how did Trans-Pacific Partnership sort of slip in unnoticed by most of us?
Well, and again, the Trans-Pacific Partnership has slipped in unnoticed because it's basically secret. The members of Congress can't even read it. People have attempted to file a FOIA request, Freedom of Information Act, but because it's not public, they can't see it. So that's one of the reasons why it's kind of been under the radar. People can't really easily see what's in it. And even if members of Congress do see what's in it, they basically have to nearly sign in blood and say they're not going to tell anybody what they saw in the chapters that they've read. Now, luckily, a couple of the chapters have been leaked, so we have a really good idea of what's in it. And by taking what we know to be factually in it, and then also looking at the corporations that are involved, the legislation that they have normally unsuccessfully pushed in Congress, it really helps us get a very, very good idea of what is in this agreement. So again, we're supposed to be talking about trade. Well, why are they talking about food safety and internet freedom? What does that have to do with trade? I mean, theoretically, Marcello and listeners, get your brains around this. What if the keepers of the internet, the corporations who basically feel that since they provide the infrastructure, they should control what's on it, what if any one of those people decided shows like this shouldn't be on the air or on the internet? I mean, so, that's what we mean when we're talking about Internet freedom. There was a bill in Congress last year. It was nicknamed SOPA. It was really the Stop Online Piracy Act. It was horribly unpopular, and it was soundly defeated. But
yes, I remember.
Most of the really bad stuff in SOPA has been quietly added into the Trans-Pacific Partnership Agreement.
Okay, I have a question, and maybe I'll switch guests again, because I'm sure you both can give us a perspective on this. But as the coordinator of Move On's national TPP team, Liz, Andrea is telling us, and so are you for that matter, that the SOPA has been slipped back in, the things that we found so offensive. And if I get correctly also from the two of you, that if this Trans-Pacific Partnership goes through fast-tracked or not, it has the power to ignore certain safety laws in America, meaning that if another country doesn't have protection for food production, or it doesn't protect people from sweatshops, that these things can then be imposed on America and American standards because we've entered into a trade agreement with a conglomerate of international corporations who are, I don't want to make it just sound like, but that is the fact, they are going for the bottom line. So my question then, yeah, go ahead, Liz.
No, go ahead. Go ahead.
Well, my question is, on one hand, what are organizations like Move On able to do about that, and then what do we do about it?
Let me answer, I guess, maybe the first part of what you were saying, just to affirm what you were saying. Yes, that is correct. Everything that you just stated, we would be opening ourselves up for what, you know, many have described as a global race to the bottom, meaning that all of our laws worldwide would essentially be reduced to the lowest common denominator. For example, you know, Europe has very good, you know, anti-GMO laws. The Canada has single-payer health care, you know, with very strict restrictions on patents. And so pharmaceutical companies have a problem with that. Mexico right now has been trying to keep GMO corn out and just, you know, challenge that, and you know they're in some fights over that with NAFTA, but TPP would actually kick NAFTA up a notch. In fact, it's been called NAFTA on steroids because it gives some additional power to these corporations. So every country that has any law that is good would be threatened, and what companies would do would be essentially to just kind of jump around the globe, if you will, you know, looking for the country with, you know, the least restrictions on whatever, and enforcing that, and then making everybody else comply. So that's the first part. Now, the second part, in terms of what we can do, it's what we are doing, and it's a two-pronged strategy. The first part is educate everybody we can think of. We're doing webinars. We're doing teach-ins, you know, home teach-ins and libraries and community halls. You know, we've adapted a PowerPoint that was created by Public Citizens Global Trade Watch. It's an excellent teaching tool. People can add to it themselves, but we've got one that we've, you know, put together with a script. We're putting it out there available to anybody who wants it. And at the end of this, I'll share an email address people can email, and we'll make sure that they get a copy or, you know, direct them. But telling people in your neighborhood, in your community, you know, that's the way that anything happens. I mean, Cesar Chavez was asked once, you know, how did you start, you know, the farm workers movement? And he said, first I spoke to one person, then I spoke to another person, then I spoke to another person. So that's sort of what we're doing with the education process. It's, you know, it's a long and painstaking thing because we do not have mass media on our side. Mass media, in fact, are, you know, some of the 600 global corporations involved in it. So they have no incentive to make this public or to help publicize it. I mean, we've had a little bit of coverage now, but it's been very difficult. So getting the word out is step one. Step two, then, is engaging and mobilizing the people who are now aware to put pressure on Congress. And that will do two things. One, it will, we hope, convince those members of Congress that if they don't do their job, they could lose their job. because their job is to represent us. And if they, in fact, give our voice away, which is what they'd be doing by signing over Fast Track Authority, they not only, you know, abdicate their own responsibility to oversee trade, but Fast Track Authority removes public debate from the equation. And that, in effect, shuts off the voice of the people. And with Congress being our voice in government, they're shutting us down so that we cannot speak. We can't have a public hearing and debate. They can't have lots and lots of discussion or debate the different issues and, you know, rewrite the language or challenge anything. But they're shutting us down. We want to let them know that if they shut us down, we'll shut them down. So that's part of it. So we have that power. We still have the power of our vote. And I think people forget about that sometimes. And we need to remember we have the power of the vote. And if we say, well, we don't like either candidate, we have the power to put a better candidate in a primary election if we don't like the one that, you know, the party is supporting. So, you know, we sometimes forget how much power.
We have the power, Liz, to run ourselves, which is what I did back in 2008.
Well, exactly. And if I remember right, you got almost half of the vote, and that was as a first-time candidate with, you know, very little, you know, financial support. So, yes, I mean.
Yes, and also had only lived in the district for 2 years. So, again, really, really critical. We can't wait for an election on this. We've got to get our voices out there and make our position known right away. So we're calling them. We're emailing them. We're actually showing up on their doorstep going, hey, you know, that Fast Track Authority thing, make sure you vote no because we don't like what's in it.
All right. Just before we're going to go to a break in about a minute, but I was just wondering, is it too much of an oversimplification to say this sounds like the next phase, if you will, in Citizens United? Is this corporations not content now with being people? I mean, we know that certainly both left and right, Democrats, Republicans, everybody has received corporate money for decades. But is this something going? It sounds to me that this is going beyond the power to be people and inject millions into our election process. It sounds like now we're spreading out over the world, and we want to make certain we don't have to worry about Uncle Sam interfering. Liz or Andrea, does that about say it? Yes,
that's absolutely right. That is so right. In fact, you know, what's been said about that is that it transcends corporate personhood and it extends to corporate nationhood, because it would, in fact, be giving corporations rights that actually supersede the rights of countries. And the countries themselves, if, for example, Mexico was sued over corn, their treasury could be raided, you know, and that decision would not be decided in any official court in any country. A global tribunal appointed by and for corporations with rotating judges and attorneys who are all corporate attorneys. So it's again, one of those crazy things that, yes, corporations are effectively taking over governments, if you will. I mean, it sounds kind of dramatic to say, gee, the corporations are taking over the world. But to simplify, they, in fact, would be. And they're also looking at a similar agreement across the pond called the Transatlantic Trade and Investment Partnership, or I'm sorry, Trade and Investment Agreement, it's called, or Trade Investment Partnership, yes, I'm sorry, TTIP, the Transatlantic Trade and Investment Partnership. That's just a mouthful there. It's also been called TAFTA because it was originally called the Transatlantic Free Trade Area, but it sounded too much like NAFTA, so they decided to, you know, soften it for public consumption and made it TTIP. But that agreement between the U.S. and some of the European countries, which just began negotiations this summer, has many of the same provisions and would undo all kinds of things. And the intellectual property sections, the sections on GMOs, all those kinds of things that Europe, you know, is so far ahead of us, you know, healthcare.
Financial regulation is another huge one, Liz, financial regulation.
Let me break in, ladies. We're going to go to a break for just a moment. We will be back, everyone, with Move On's Liz Warren and the co-state coordinator for PDA Virginia, Andrea Miller, who herself is a candidate for Congress, back in 2008. We're going to talk about this, but I want to leave you with this thought as you try to digest everything they've been saying to us. If a corporation's loyalty is where it can spend the least money to make the most off of their product, regardless of national laws, if they're able to move about the world with that MO, then it's not too dramatic to say that corporations are making a move to take over the world. We'll be right back. Hold that thought and call us if you will.
Stock inflation. People got no jobs in this nation, no occupation, so they occupy Wall Street. Want a piece of the American pie so their pockets can be fat like two all beef patties, special sauce, lettuce and cheese on a sesame seed bun. From Sesame Street to Wall Street, we all need funds. But the 99% say their bank accounts is lean cuisine while the banks got hot pockets and they greedy with funds. And the 1% say they like that hen who wanted to make bread, but when they asked, everyone said, I'm too busy having fun. But when the bread was done, they all standing in line like, ooh, can I have some? Some trying to make a dollar out of 15 cents and some like 50 cents trying, dying to get rich like creamy milk chocolate. Wu-Tang cash rules everything around me, cream, bills, and profits. Economists are prophets. They predict the rise and fall of the Dow Jones like yeast. Homeless people already occupy alleys, walls, and streets.
Welcome back to the Reasonable Voice Blog Talk Radio. We're having quite a discussion today about the pretty secretive Trans-Pacific Partnership that President Obama is trying to get fast-tracked, which essentially allows our corporations, we think of them, you know, American, Bank of America, right? It's got to be American. It's on Wall Street. It's right up in New York. But really, corporations are not a nationality so much as we are hearing from our ladies today, Liz Warren and Andrea Miller, that they are becoming nations, or at least more powerful than nations. Andrea, can you pick up right where we were with the point you were making about financial limitations and taking advantage of the situation?
All right. One of the things that I heard in the break was there was a reference to Occupy Wall Street and the 99%. Well, one of the things that the 99% was really hoping to do was tax Wall Street. We are currently in, as yet another, budget fight, budget drama. And when we come back and again revisit that, which we're going to have to do probably sooner than later, you normally always hear the argument about revenue. Well, one of the biggest opportunities for revenue in the United States is a tax on Wall Street, otherwise known as a Robin Hood tax or a financial transaction tax. Now, Liz mentioned that not only are we currently negotiating this in the Trans-Pacific, but we're also working on a European agreement. Well, the European nations have agreed that they really want to introduce a financial speculation tax. In the United States, it's estimated that this financial transaction tax would generate $350 billion a year. And we're talking a tiny tax. We're talking 50 cents on a $100 sale. Let me repeat that. If someone, traders, they sell $100 worth of stock, there would be a 50-cent tax. Well, Wall Street is objecting to the notion of any tax in any amount for any reason. So, again, they have now come up with a backdoor way to shut down government saying, wait a minute, you people are raking in trillions of dollars of profit. Virtually everything else that is sold, there's a tax on it, and you folks are paying no taxes. So, as I said, they've come up with a way that completely goes around the will of the nation and the will of the people, and they basically say, you will not regulate us in this way. And they stuck it in the, quote, trade agreement.
And, okay, so, you know, it's mind-boggling, but it's trying to avoid the word they, if we can. Can we list any of the corporations or name any of the corporations who are actually involved in this? Is that, I know it's
Comcast,
secret, but do we
think
have any?
General Electric. Oh, we know the names. Think all uh-huh. the big corporations that pay little or no taxes. J.P. Morgan Chase, and they're all in there.
And what countries are they trying to get to be a part of this trade agreement?
Well,
Liz, you have any?
Can I run down the list? Because
sure, sure.
I just sort
Absolutely.
Of rattle it off the top of my head.
Sure.
In addition to the U.S., we have Canada, Japan, Peru, New Zealand, Mexico, Chile, Australia, Vietnam, Brunei, and Malaysia.
Wow. So do we have any feeling from those, the people in those countries, that they are aware? I guess we aren't all that aware except for ladies like you telling us, but is there an uprise or anywhere of demanding that governments not just cave to corporations
in
this trade agreement?
Actually, there has been, and even beyond that, the governments themselves have had issues with much of the language in the trade agreement. During our government shutdown, President Obama decided, you know, not to go to Bali for the last round of negotiations. And so some of the other nations actually were able to have discussions without the U.S. in effect dominating those discussions. And from the reports that I got, and you can find, you know, you can Google, you know, online if you want to find stories on it, because that was in fact reported in some of the media. Some of the comments made by the leaders of the other nations, you know, had to do with some of the provisions the United States was asking for. So if you actually start to read what's been written about these negotiations along the way in the foreign press, the common denominator is that the United States is actually driving a lot of this. You know, and by the United States, they mean the 600 corporations that are advising the United States. You know, they say the United States, because President Obama is essentially holding hands with 600 corporate entities who are serving as, quote, trade advisors on this agreement, and, you know, country by country trying to make the other nations comply. And so, yes, they have issues with a lot of the stuff in it, and it's going to be very interesting to see what happens as a result, because there has been talk that some of these other countries may in fact come to an agreement among themselves and not participate in this, and that would be probably not such a bad thing.
That's an excellent thing, and it might just be, you know, it's another example, if we can't keep our house in order at home, not that I'm wishing this on America, but it's another opening, you know, given what we've just been through, the shutdown and whatever, that other countries will begin to step up to the plate and go, you know, maybe we shouldn't just all be following America and their corporations in line here. You were about to say, Andrea?
Oh, one of the things I was going to jump in with is on the GMOs, the genetically modified organisms. So not only is Mexico fighting GMO corn, but many nations in Europe actually have, for all intents and purposes, outlawed it. And so, again, here we have this trade agreement saying, no, Monsanto is one of the official corporate trade advisors, and your ban on GMOs would hurt Monsanto's future profitability, so you're not going to be able to do that.
I'm not rushing us. We still have time, but I want to make sure, because we've thrown, or you two ladies have, Liz and Andrea have, thrown so much at all those listening and all those who will listen to as a podcast in the future. I want us just, if we could, slow down just a tad and start giving our listeners some specific places. Now, obviously, as Andrea has taught me. You can get off your duff and drive or bus or train to Washington, D.C. There are a number of buildings that house our federal government and Congress. So you can hit the halls of Congress, and I know it from congressmen as well, that if you show up, your voice counts a lot more than if you click a petition online. I'm not discouraging the clicking digitally or otherwise signing petitions to wake up everyone, especially Congress, about what's going on with Trans-Pacific Partnership. I'm just saying first try to go and tell your congressman in person. Second, make a phone call, make several phone calls. And then lastly, try to do it over the Internet. But getting back to something Liz was suggesting, I'd just like us to elaborate, if we could, in our last 5 or 10 minutes or so, on what exactly can people do? Where can they go? What websites? What articles? How can they get more information? Because it's been a lot to sort of absorb. So where do they go to follow through besides their congressperson?
Well, what's a great thing, I'll hop in here very quickly and applaud Andrea. She's actually created a wonderful resource for people, and it's super easy to find. It's www.pdamerica.org/TPP. So pdamerica.org/TPP. And if a person visits that page, she has a wonderful interactive map. You can click on your state. You can find your representative, and you can make a plan to go visit that representative's office in the district. And district offices are a great place. If you don't have the time or the, you know, motivation to travel to Washington, plan to visit your member's district office. Write a letter. PDA actually has a letter that you can personalize, and go deliver it to your district office. Encourage a bunch of people in your neighborhood to go with you. You also can, again, make those phone calls. You can email your representative. If you live in the district, most representatives, they have an email. That's also up on that site. So you can do all of that congressional outreach right through a single one-stop spot that Andrea has created for everybody. So bless her heart, she has been instrumental in putting this together for everybody, and it's a super easy place to go. If they want to find out more on the subject, there's also a couple of links on that page to the Public Citizens Global Trade Watch site and to the Citizens Trade Campaign, groups that are leading this fight in Washington for us and around the country. We've got so many different groups working on this, but it's very easy if you want to get involved. If you'd like information on a group working in your community, you can email me, liz.moveon@earthlink.net, liz.moveon@earthlink.net, and I will forward your name to a community organizer in your area who can put you in touch with the groups working on this. You can do the same thing, I think, through the PDA site. But the key is to get involved in your own community. There are lots of people working on this. Do, you know, if nothing else, just print out a letter, drop it off to your local member of Congress. And if you want to get more involved and learn more, there's plenty of places you can do it, and we'd be happy to both point you to them.
And I think I know we've made this point, but perhaps we need to make it again, and that is everybody, among other things, Andrea, is very much involved in the strategy of the Equal Rights Amendment for everyone, including women, for the three-state strategy. But in that capacity and the restoration of rights and a lot of other issues and now Trans-Pacific Partnership fast-tracking, we have Liz Warren, we have Andrea Miller telling us how we can help. Now, the difference here is this is not something we can stay at home and order pizza and watch TV and pretend away. It does not matter whether you're male or female, young or old. It doesn't matter whether you're a Democrat, a Republican, liberal, moderate, independent, or conservative. It matters if you are American and you want to keep some semblance of that sense of freedom that we're always so bragging about, made in America and exceptionalism. Well, sometimes you have to stand up for that. And the place, correct me if I'm wrong, Andrea and Liz, the place that we need as we the people to fix this, to change this, to stop this takeover is the U.S. Congress. I'm sorry, that's all we've got. But it's Congress that's going to have to put the brakes on it, and Congress isn't going to listen unless a lot of people do some visiting and talking and emailing and letter writing and stopping off at district offices. You don't have to go all the way to D.C. You get the staff talking at your local office, congressman's local office, and he or she will get the word. Andrea, jump on that in any way you wish.
Well, one of the other things that we put on the map is some members of Congress have already signed letters and made statements in opposition to the Trans-Pacific Partnership. So when you go to that map and you click on your state, you can find your congressman and see, is there anything about Fast Track or the partnership agreement itself where they have expressed a concern. And so then you can take a very generic letter that we've provided, and then you can customize it and add in something so that if you know your congressperson voted against SOPA, as many of them did, you can thank them for that and tell them you want them to continue to protect our internet freedom by voting against Fast Track. Or if they say they are concerned about currency manipulation, the same idea. You want them to continue to stand up and prevent currency manipulation by opposing Fast Track.
Thank you, Andrea. And in the last couple of moments we have, if you could once again slowly tell us the website address of this incredibly helpful site that you've put together to help us, we the people, understand the Trans-Pacific partnership threat to our freedom and what we can do, and to find out what and where and how and to whom we need to talk to do something about it.
You can go to www.pdamerica.org/TPP, Trans-Pacific Partnership, www.pdamerica.org/TPP.
Thank you so much, Andrea Miller and Liz Warren, for being with us today, being our reasonable voices today on the Reasonable Voice Blog Talk Radio. We're going to go to another break, saying goodbye to the ladies, but we're going to have a panel discussion after we come back from the break. I cannot thank you enough, Liz Warren of MoveOn.org and Andrea Miller, a former congressional candidate and field director for PDA and the co-state coordinator for PDA in Virginia, who has a marvelous new website that will give you the information that you need to know what's wrong, but also give you the information you need to be a part of the solution. Thank you so much, Elizabeth Warren and Andrea Miller. We'll be talking to you, and I'll be seeing you on the website. We're going to go to break now and come back to our panel. Goodbye, ladies, and wishing you all the best in all that you're doing.
Thank you,
Marcella.
Homeless people already occupy alleys, walls, and streets, wearing their camel fatigues, sleeping under a canopy, heating up a can of peas that they got from the convenience store damaged and cheap. Some living like it's famine a feast, while others enjoying salmon and meat. Still others fill and stock their cupboards with their government-issued cheese in their pantries. And Uncle Sam, he's got a bis. Quick mix, instant fix like Instagram, but without the camera tweets, powder poured in a pile, and all the while they doing a shutdown, throwing a tantrum. Please, calamity, 99% want anarchy, because they think 1% is just vanity, saying, Jeeves, please pamper me, land of the free, home of the brave, that needs to be saved, because we didn't learn how to save, 200 years overdue, and we need to pay our rent. And our debtors don't care about one or 99, but they want 100%.
Welcome back to the Reasonable Voice Blog Talk Radio. We're joined by our panel to discuss. Mr. Bernard Hankins is with us today, Michelle Opperman, and Daniel L. Garner. We represent a demographic that represents most of you, so we want to hear from you. Please call in with your questions. But we are just finding out a lot of this about the Trans-Pacific Partnership, and we are going to talk about it from our point of view. And who would like to start, Daniel?
Oh, well, goodness. Well, thank you for having us today, Marcello. We certainly have heard a lot about the TPP, and there's just a few things that, one, come to mind I think's kind of important to discuss. I mean, when we're talking about corporations that are sort of in bed with government, controlling trade, we've really lost, I guess, whatever one could call capitalism. This seems to be more corporatism or accreditism even than a real system. Second, I think what this TPP bill shows us is that when they're talking about legislation that's supposedly about trade, they're talking about intellectual copyright, which who in America has the time to, one, even read these things, and two, to know that these things are in the bill? Recently, when the Republicans were arguing to defund Obamacare, some of the things that they were demanding is the increasing oil drilling in the United States of America, which, why would anyone think that a bill having to do with Obamacare would have something to do with oil drilling, which makes it increasingly difficult to, one, trust that we know what's in bills, and two, to know what are, even if we're for something that's good, the strings that are attached to that good bill that are bad, that how can we even know about them? And third, just as one final point, I think is just kind of a overall statement of the country today. I'm increasingly worried that the country might be losing the capacity to tell the difference between serious issues and non-serious issues, because we're so used to hearing that this is extraordinarily severe and this is the end of the world if this doesn't happen. Well, consequently, then when we're dealing with something that really is a big deal, we're losing the capacity to do something about it, and we need to recognize that in ourselves and act.
Thank you, Daniel. Before we move on to Michelle or Bernard, we have a call in. Can we take that call? Hello? We have someone there. Hello? Let's try another line. Sorry.
Hello?
Hello? Yes. Welcome to the Reasonable Voice Blog Talk Radio. Do you have a question or a point to make about the Trans-Pacific Partnership?
Can you hear me now?
Yes, we can. Go right ahead.
Hello?
Hello? We hear you fine. All right, we're going to move on to the with the panel now, and hopefully they'll call back, and we'll get through to them. Michelle Opperman, what are your thoughts about what we've been talking about today?
Yeah, I think I appreciate some of the things Daniel brought up, especially concerning being able to identify what is a serious problem and what is not a serious problem. It's difficult with the rhetoric. With government shutdown and terms like that, and I'm thinking about, SNL live sketches about, the apocalypse. And I think that something that I have a question or, more of a comment about concerning the TTP is more the fact that some of the things that possibly the TPP wants to do aren't, in and of themselves bad, but I think the fact that that there's a governing body making these decisions about it is what's so wrong. There's nothing wrong with self-censorship of internet or, with one's own decision personally about, food and where they're getting it from. But I think it's very problematic when you have the government making decisions, along with the corporations about such topics, because then it gives the citizens so little decision in how their life will progress and, how the country will progress.
Well, I mean, especially when you're talking about a governing body that's one with the corporations that are going to be gaining from this action. It's very hard to know when the government is for the people if you cannot know when the government is backed by corporations, when it's not backed by corporations, when there's dirty money, when there's not dirty money. It just makes it a big confusing mess that's very difficult to walk through, especially when you're trying to provide for your family, trying to do the best you can.
Right.
We're going to jump in again. We have another caller. See if we can get through this time. Hello, are you there?
Hello?
Yes. Yes. Do you have a question or a point you'd like to make, a comment on the Trans-Pacific Partnership?
Hi, can you hear me?
Yes, I can. Can you?
Oh, good. Yeah, sorry about that. I dropped my BlackBerry in the coffee cup yesterday, and it hasn't been the same since. Actually, I just called the number so I could listen on the phone since I'm not near a computer. And I've tuned in a little late because I just saw the tweet from PD America. This is Randall Holmes. I'm with Progressive Democrats of America Election Integrity. And I wasn't going to butt in, actually, but since you allowed me so kindly, I'd like to mention something that Greg Palast brought up a couple weeks ago on Ring of Fire Radio TV, on Free Speech TV, and that's about banking regulations, that these trade deals, which are written by corporate America, by and for the global corporatocracy, not only include so-called free trade and anti-labor, anti-environment things like that, but also not only deregulating banks and the banksters, but also forcing other countries to lower their standards and cooperate in the kind of hanky-panky that Goldman Sachs fomented on Greece. And I believe it was the president of Bolivia or Ecuador was forced to take some crappy stock trades or something like that. I can't remember exactly what that was about. I just wanted to bring that up and make sure that that's part of the conversation. Thanks.
We appreciate your call. Anyone here want to comment on, you know, we've heard banksters, but it's kind of gone out of fashion, but, you know, they're still there. What do you, Bernard, anything?
I mean, as far as the banks, you know, I kind of talked about it a little bit in the spoken word break that we did. And the thing to me that I mean, whenever people talk about banks and Wall Street, I was always confused because I never quite understood what banks and Wall Street had to do directly with me. I always explained it as somebody's coming and setting up a RV on my lawn and being like, hey, I now affect you. And I'm like, what do you mean? I didn't invite you. I didn't ask you to be here. I mean, if you want to be a part of banks and Wall Street, I mean, it's fine. But I don't understand why when I wake up in the morning, I need to turn on the TV and be like, oh, my goodness, the Dow Jones is now at 15 points. Oh, no, what am I going to do? It's like, actually not. I'm going to continue to do what I normally do because I'm not necessarily particularly tied up in that personally.
Except now, according to our experts today, our Reasonable Voices guests, we are all tied up in it, and it's kind of slipping under the radar, and we don't know. What do you think, Daniel?
Well, I mean, to that, banks choose to make billions of dollars in derivatives and financial, quote-unquote, innovations like that. That can obliterate the value of your house. You have no relation to that. You know nothing about it. And I think, you know, on that point, a problem with is that it really consists of the United States of America that is getting an agreement with a lot of countries that don't really have a lot of leverage in the debate, in the conversation. I mean, we're talking Chile, I believe. We're talking Vietnam. We're talking nations that are desperate to get any sort of economic boost that they can, and they realize that if they sign this agreement, they will. But ultimately, it's very much leaning in favor of the United States of America, which I think some of the arguments America's making is that it will boost innovation and it will help manufacturing. But you really, if the America's going to talk as if it's a free market system of some kind that believes in competition, well, you don't gain from taking advantage of competition that's weaker than you. You're really, what brings the most out of you is to have equal trade agreements with other nations, not taking advantage of them. But one could argue that's very similar to what the banks do then.
Yeah, that's true. And Michelle, I wonder if I don't know if you heard the portion of our guest's interview this earlier, but there was a point that they were making on this very thing that the caller is talking about, and Bernard and Daniel, this idea that we are being sort of absorbed into something, a system that's been going on. And again, I don't want to leave the impression that this is new. I often write that when Franklin Delano Roosevelt died in 1945, people get tired of hearing me say that, but when he died, that was the first president and only president who had served for 12 years. So he had a real control with guiding the country into a lot of social services that we now take for granted. And since his death, there have been corporations trying to take that back. And I think part of, I really believe that part of this shutdown is as much corporate-oriented as anything else, and it has taken our eye off the ball for decades. So, Michelle, from your point of view, I mean, given your point in life, your age, what do you need?
Yeah, well, I mean, I think thinking about this whole issue is that, you know, to me, it makes me, I think there's a primary problem here, which is to, misidentify and misdefine what profit is. Because I think, this trade agreement is a lot about profit and profiting other nations and the United States, but it has so much to do with corporate profit, which in theory is supposed to help everyone. You know, it's supposed to affect everyone and their welfare and be good for United States citizens. But at the same time, I think the fact that we have such a limited view of what profit is, we forget about the holistic understanding of profiting as a person, you know, as a human being. And that's where I think it's, you know, it's very problematic, like I said before, that there would be some governing body deciding what it means to profit. Because it's not just an economic term. I mean, it is and it isn't. There's so much more beyond that. And because we don't always see the fuller picture of profiting, we have these continuing issues.
Well, what about, we want America to be a world leader, but what about the point that Liz Warren made, that and Andrea Miller as well, that even in President Obama, who I feel is probably one of the more progressive presidents we've had recently, the possible exception of Bill Clinton, but nonetheless, again, liberal or not, conservative or not, Republican or Democrat or not, when America, in the person of Barack Obama or any other president, goes to a conference to discuss something, notwithstanding Putin, but what happens if we impose the American brand because the president is not standing there saying, here, this is what's good for everybody and good for we, the people of America, but this is what's good for a corporation's masquerading as Americans, but are takers in the world. I'm rambling, but Bernard,
Well, before we get to that, I kind of wanted to comment on something Michelle said. You know, me, I'm always looking at words and the importance of words. So when we use the word corporate, it becomes so passive that when you look at the word corporate, where does it come from? It comes from corpse, body, you know,
yes,
and that
yes.
can be taken positively or negative. It can be dead, which is what I count, you know, associate with a lot of people who go to corporate jobs. You know, they are dead. But if you think about the word corporate, like you hear this a lot in church context, they talk about corporate worship when people come together as they say, the body of Christ. So to me, it's interesting to think about the word corporate, corporeal, and what's the place in South America, Corpus Christi, Christi.
Mm-hmm.
Just the way these words are thrown around so often that you never take the time to think about, well, what does corporate mean? So it's very interesting to me to connect the word corpse, corporate as in body, and then how now we talk about it. Are corporations people? You know, that whole kind of argument there, but in a sense, they are supposed to be a kind of collective
yes.
person.
Yes. I was going to say, forgive me interrupting, because this is a point I always upsets my liberal friends. Corporations are people. The problem is the Supreme Court and corporations have used that as an excuse to buy elections, but the point is government and corporations are made up of people. It's not the granite buildings. There are people there making decisions that are affecting everyone's life. Daniel, you haven't jumped in for a while.
Well, I mean, two things. One, when there's a book, All the King's Men by Penn Horn, which sort of talks about the case is that even if you go into politics and you're genuinely a good person and you genuinely want to make a real difference, the very act of getting elected forces you to compromise yourself out of the ability to make that difference, which is a scary reality, because then you have it's not really so much the individual, Republican, Democrat, or what have you, it is the system itself of which requires that for one to get to the power where they can make the good difference that they want to make, they have to compromise themselves out of the ability to make that difference. And that's something we might be seeing in the president, we could have seen in Bush, Clinton, all of them. And I think the more and more corporate money gets tied into it, K Street lobbying and all of these things, the more and more that's going to be the case. Now, two, I think on the issue of profit that Michelle brought up, a problem today is that profit is not tied to problem solving. Profit, you can now make a profit off of profit. That's a major problem with the banking sector. You are actually, if you can innovate a creative way by which to transfer funds, then that makes money. So you're making money off of money. Well, consequently, the value of money is constantly fluctuating, and we have a very unstable system. And Adam Smith's The Wealth of Nations, he really kind of, in my mind, captures his vision of capitalism when he describes this little boy who creates this invention because he wants to save himself labor. So he comes up with this great idea, and then, you know, Adam Smith's like talking about how the whole, you know, civilization process because of this innovation. But simultaneously, Adam Smith then goes to the pen shop, which would be kind of modern manufacturing industrial, and he's very depressed, not knowing that the steam engine is about to be created, and that's going to change everything. But the point that I think is brought out is we are so far removed from an America that is truly creative and innovative that we are now very reliant on our corporations and our financial systems. And really, if you look at what this TPP is really going to do, is it's going to expand the financial system and the corporate system that we have so we can further put off going toward real innovation and real creativity, of which, of course, we see in Silicon Valley, but on uncommon knowledge. I mean, Peter Thiel was talking about we haven't seen really, truly, you know, advancements in cars in 30 years or airplanes. We've seen it on the Internet, but when it comes to innovations and, say, things we create, we don't see it, and that has to change.
What about this TPP if it's, as you say, if it's expanding the financial system as we know it? Isn't that the financial system in 2008 the same one that sent us crashing to our knees, Michelle?
Yeah.
What do you think?
Absolutely. Yeah, no, I mean, I think that, you know, it's clearly just by what you just said, Marcello, that's there's a problem with it amplifying and growing bigger and bigger. I think, you know, I was talking with Daniel and Bernard about how the government seems to make this invincibility shield, and then it gives it to corporations. And I think it sort of builds this, you know, it's kind of like if you have a business, you can just shut down for a few days. You really couldn't. You probably would take a big hit. The government, on the other hand, can shut down and it still functions and runs. It's pretty much invincible. And I think that that's problematic because then it's not, you know, you're not really being realistic about, you know, the way things are really meant to operate. And I was thinking about what Bernard said about corporations and corporate jobs and from a lot of his poetry. You know, I often read it and I'm in very, you know, it's provoking ideas about the corporate, you know, corporate jobs. But I think, you know, there are, like Daniel was saying, there are people who have very good objectives and very good hearts who work in corporations, who work in government. And I think that's important to recognize, and not to just see every person in it as bad, but to recognize that they're trying to do good things. But it's a matter of, you know, the fact that the corporation is as strong as its individuals. So that's something I wanted to add.
Well, I mean, too, what I'll say is, just to close, to solve this situation, you're going to see, you know, with the banks, you'd have to let them fail, but that would cause a lot of pain. So we have to make hard decisions if we want to make the difference we need to make.
And we all have to get involved, and we're going to have to leave it at that today, ladies and gentlemen. Thanks for joining us. The Reasonable Voices in the studio with me today are technical support creative catalyst and spoken word poet, Mr. Bernard Hankins, with Michelle Upperman and Daniel L. Garner, the literary duo and philosophical minds who created O.G. Rose. Thank you for joining us today and recommending us to your friends. This has been the Reasonable Voice Blog Talk Radio, and I'm your host, Marcello Rolando, hoping you will become one of the Reasonable Voices heard around the world.
No strings attached, no looking back. A new man is what you looking at, giving up everything.
Hey, yo, I got something to say. I need y'all to listen, which is what doesn't happen for most politicians. Yo, I spit thorough rap. Yo, where's my burrow at? I'm fed up with the federal government bureaucrats. Yo, don't need no stethoscope to hear they talking muddled. This is progress. The Frederick Douglass freedom struggle, so they stack their next million. I need some neck healing. I speak truth, raise the roof while they raise a debt ceiling.
Oh.